I'm Dan LaCasa with the Honolulu Advertiser, and we're talking to Marilyn Cristofori, Chief Executive Officer of the Hawaii Arts Alliance. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you for sitting with us. We're doing our Leadership Corner interview, and tell me about your name, Cristofori.
Actually, the name is the same name as the gentleman Bartholomew Cristofori who invented the piano. Lo, those many years ago. The only problem was that he, Steinbeck, took out the patent.
Oh!
So he, but he did invent it, and he's known, there's an album out called Cristofori's Album that has some of the early piano works.
Really? Are you related?
Only by marriage.
And what is the ethnicity of the name?
It's Italian, and I am Italian.
And your title is Chief Executive Officer,
mm-hmm.
and you've been with the organization very briefly.
No, I've been with the organization since 1994.
Oh, excuse me. Beg your pardon. And it was founded in 1980. 80, okay.
Yeah, we're in our 25th
pardon
year.
Me.
So I came in 94. I was part-time originally, and then in 98 I went full-time.
What was your original position as a part-time
executive director?
Yeah.
I've always been in the leadership role. Recently, they upgraded my position. The board, we merged with another arts organization. So we're now the umbrella organization for the state in the arts. And we encompass arts education, arts in the community, and we advocate for all the arts.
Right.
And I have to emphasize all the arts.
Mm-hmm.
This is music, dance, theater, and visual arts. It's not, often there's a confusion. You say art, people think only of visual arts.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the performing and the visual arts.
Well, while we're on the subject, so can you, is it possible to describe how large that umbrella is and how many different groups and people you touch?
Yeah. You can see in the annual report that we're happy to share with anybody that asks, but we have about 100 member organizations.
Mm-hmm. On every island?
Yeah. We represent on all the islands. We have our membership here. We have individuals of different categories. So altogether, some upwards of 400 individuals and then over 100 organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So our membership profile encompasses everything from the smallest to the Academy for Arts or the Opera or the Symphony.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a small organization and you're a member, what kind of interaction do you have with you and your office?
We'll try to be a voice for all the arts so that we try to represent if there's any issues. For instance, the maintaining the grants that go out mm-hmm. to small organizations from the public agencies, either the City and County of Honolulu or the State Foundation on Culture and the Arts. Those little teeny grants, sometimes $5,000, really make the difference between the vitality of a small group.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some range of what kinds of groups you mentioned, visual arts
Honolulu Theater for Youth, Hawaii Opera, Hawaii Youth Opera Chorus, Hawaii Youth Symphony. There's a listing of all of our member organizations
mm-hmm.
in our newsletter. And so that at any time that somebody would like to see who they are, it's usually all given on the final page of the newsletter. So you can see every one of them. We have individuals that are groups too. St. Louis School, a lot of
mm-hmm.
schools.
Yeah.
Hawaii Watercolor Society, Hawaii Theater Center, Marianao School, Colleges of Education, College of Arts and Humanities, Clarence Lee Design. I mean, it's all over the place.
Yeah, I was looking at them on the website. It was very impressive. But
yeah.
It was some of the smaller ones that I didn't recognize.
They may be on another island that mm-hmm. you're not familiar with. I'm not sure. In each one of them, sometimes I have to check myself.
And what kind of an operating budget do you have?
about $1 million.
And the funding comes from?
All over the place.
Mostly donations?
I wish it was mostly donations. That's my answer to your challenge question.
Okay, well, let's keep going then.
But again, in our annual report, you can see the source of fundings, so that we have some programs. Membership is a small part because our membership mm-hmm. fees are exceedingly low. We're the best bargain in town. There's no lower membership fees because that's not what we're about, mm-hmm. living off the members. We want to represent the members.
I see.
We do get a healthy amount from government. That's at the national level as well as the state level. We do get
national meaning National Endowment for the Arts.
The Arts and the U.S. Department of Education. Those are the two big ones.
Uh-huh. That's 51.8%.
Yeah. And then, as you can see, our individual contributions are only 5.9%.
But compared to corporations, which are only 1.5%.
Yes. And these two areas need a lot of infusion.
But it's interesting, I guess what strikes me is that the individual donors are significantly larger than corporations.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? While both need to come up, why do you think the corporations are so?
I think the corporations are still struggling with the myth that the arts are a frill.
And they're a frill?
Yeah.
Yes.
They're an extra.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas individuals understand, because they usually have had some experience,
right.
A child or a grandchild or their own personal experience, where they know how the arts have made a difference in their lives.
I see.
Corporations are still looking at the bottom line, and they haven't quite connected the dots between how the arts contribute to the health of the economy. And so, for instance, there is a study out that shows that the arts are worth $181 million in Honolulu. I have a copy of that for you, or I can get it for you. I can definitely pull it. I don't have it in this packet.
What do you mean that they're worth $180
million? $181. That's in terms of jobs, and it doesn't even touch fully all the related jobs, but our most concrete example is the Arts and Arts Garage, which mm-hmm. is our project downtown.
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago, the Arts Garage was pretty much empty of tenants. We had a little teeny small seed grant from the city and county of just under $25,000 to start what was called an arts incubator, to prove that the arts do have impact on the economic vitality mm-hmm. of the neighborhood. And by starting the Arts at Mark's Garage, we have been a leader in the revitalization of the whole downtown, founding the first Fridays, mm-hmm. for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody laughed at us when we said we wanted to open an art gallery and a performing arts space down in Mark's Garage. It's what? Nuts. We did get a lot of individual, and several of the foundations gave us the funds to do the renovations. The landlord was extremely generous in giving us an affordable rent to allow mm-hmm. us to get our foot in the door and get started there. And we've renovated the space. And now it's like everybody knows where the Arts and Arts Garage is. Everybody goes there for First Friday. Today, 5 years later, every other space in the arts in Mark's Garage is now occupied by an arts business or related. For instance, related we call like the Red Elephant. They have their coffee shop, but they have a whole performing arts space built out behind. So people mix and match, you know.
Mm-hmm. How many spaces is that are now occupied?
One, two, details, three, four, five. There's one little space that has yet to open. It's opening in July 6, 7, I think it's 7 or 8. I have to actually call.
So, to getting back to my question of how are the arts worth $181 million, that's a little example.
A little concrete example.
Yeah, a little microcosm.
A little microcosm of what has happened in that neighborhood and how many businesses there. You know, the bars and the restaurants do enough business on First Friday to allow for the little slower times during the week. We'd love it if they do that business all the time.
Right.
And we're trying to build, you know, build further. But
and government and business leaders like it because the area is getting a little
bit
more.
It's getting cleaned up.
Yeah.
And exactly like we like it. Mm-hmm. The residents are finally having an opportunity. We have families in the park to come out and use the park for positive social interactions.
I'm sorry, families in the park?
Yeah, we do a program called Families in the Park where in the afternoon on the first Friday and other selected days we bring in an artist. We do, we've done puppet making, we've done storytelling, we do visual art making.
Down in the park?
The Smithberry Tana Park.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, so by beginning to use those spaces in a creative, positive way, and the neighbors come out, and the drug dealers are not hanging in the park because it's
right.
filled with other people and they can't really do their business, so they're going to go leave the area. So that's an impact on the economy and the quality of life.
Wonderful. That must feel great.
Yeah. So then you cut. If you start to, we figure that since the Arts at Mark's Garage, we've probably created 1,100 new jobs.
Really?
Yeah.
1,100.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's counting every artist that we have contracted to deliver a program. We hire caterers. For, you know, there's an opening night. People come in and make and serve the food. Just, you know, the lay shops do better business. Just all of the things that are there that function.
Right.
And so we did an estimate survey of the impact that we had on that little area. So,
have you estimated how many patrons or visitors have come as a result?
The first Friday, we had about 500 people walk through the door. We do a counter. Now we're up to about 3,000.
Per event? Wow.
Right.
So what is that?
And that
over
doesn't
the
count the rest of the month. That's just the busiest
first
day.
Yeah.
But we probably, you know, service, you would say, people that just come either to a performing arts event or a gallery or an education class, we're probably approaching, you know, well, it varies between 2,000 and 4,000.
Per event?
Per month.
Per month.
Not per event. Because we get that big influx on First Friday.
Right. Great. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about the programs and what you do. We'll get back to you a little bit. So where were you born?
I was born in California.
Yeah, whereabouts?
And I was born in Sacramento and raised largely in the Bay Area.
River City.
Not River City.
Sacramento, River City.
Yeah, oh, River City, yeah. Yeah.
Where in the Bay? What were you doing in Sacramento? What were your family doing in Sacramento when you were born?
They were just plain middle class. My father was in banking and my mother was a legal secretary.
And where were you raised in the Bay Area?
Lots of places. Right in San Francisco. For a while I went to school right in San Francisco. My grandparents lived there. I lived with my grandparents for a period of my childhood for a number of reasons. and then I would say more in like Menlo Park and South Bay.
Yeah, I'm from the Bay Area.
But also I had a very close uncle in Marin County, so I was over in Kentfield and that area also.
You miss it at all?
Not since I lived here. No. It was great. I loved it. I'm happy to touch base again.
Yeah. I used to work at the San Francisco Examiner when it was
really?
A real newspaper.
That was a nice newspaper.
It was a great newspaper.
I loved that newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It barely barely something you want to put on your floor now. High school that you
Graduated from Sacramento Senior High School, public school, in the good old days from public school.
Sacramento Senior High School?
Yeah.
What is that? I know it's Sacramento, but yeah. What part?
I know in Hawaii it's important that you know your high school.
We won't ask you what you read then. College?
Stanford.
And what was your degree in?
My first degree.
Okay.
Was
please.
In education.
Was that a BS in education?
No, it is called the Bachelor of Arts, BA in education. Yeah.
What were you going to do with that? What was the plan?
What I was going to do and what I didn't do are two separate stories.
Please.
My family said, you have to get the teaching credentials so that you have something to fall back on.
Right.
And then I went to Europe and started dancing, started my dance career.
Oh.
My family did not think that was a very good idea.
What kind of dancing?
Ballet and concert.
Yeah. Modern concert?
Yeah, concert. We'll say modern dance.
Okay. It's
but concert stage dance. And so my little known fact I was going to mention, mm-hmm. why my family didn't think that was a good idea at that time. I was offered a full scholarship to what was then Radcliffe, but it was Harvard Business School. And I went off to follow my arts career. My family thought that was nuts.
This is after Stanford?
Yeah, upon graduation.
Yeah.
Supposedly I went to Europe for the summer, and then I just didn't come home for 4 years.
Okay, so we started, you graduated Stanford.
Yeah.
With an education degree. You got accepted to Harvard.
I did not go.
Right, went to Europe instead. Did you get another degree? Did you go
yes.
back to school?
Then eventually, one thing and another, I did go back to school, and I got my Master's of Arts in Theater and Dance. But that was many years later from California State University.
Which one?
Chico.
Is it CSU Chico?
Yes, yeah, CSU Chico. And I did that, I had sort of picked at graduate work along the way, and then they hired me in a tenure track position.
Okay, the Master of Arts in Theater
and Dance.
And Dance.
Yeah.
How many years later was that from?
Oh, this was about 12 years later.
Ah, good for you.
But there's another one even many years later.
Okay, so then you were hired as tenure track?
Yeah, faculty as a dance professor. But so I finished up my degree. And then I was tenured. I became a professor.
Get in the doctoral program?
In the arts, a master's degree is considered a terminal degree.
Oh.
In the performing arts.
Oh.
It's beginning to fade away, but definitely until very recently, that was a terminal degree.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So there's another degree coming in our conversation.
Yeah, so I have three careers. I had my education degree,
uh-huh.
but then I had my artistic career.
Right.
Then I got my artistic degree and began my education career. So then I was a professor for 11 years. And then my husband was offered a position here, and I was eligible for an early retirement, which I took, and we moved here. And I was hired into nonprofit administration.
Your husband?
Is the chair of theater and dance at UH.
Oh, okay.
Now, he wasn't then, but.
All right. He was offered a position at UH?
Yes. Okay. And we were at UC Santa Cruz at that time. So we moved from Santa Cruz here.
Sea Slugs? No, banana slits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. So then I started in this nonprofit arts administration.
Mm-hmm. At?
Here in Hawaii.
At the?
Well, I started with Association for Education of Young Children in Early Childhood. And then this organization sought me out. And I went back and I got an executive MBA.
Mm-hmm.
And at UH. And so that to me was the circle that I didn't complete, because I never did my business school. Mm-hmm. But I did do it.
But you always had education and arts were always intertwined.
That was always my...
Why the executive MBA?
Because I found out that I got to the ceiling on my intuition in terms of being an administrator. Mm-hmm. And I needed some hardcore skills. And I wasn't going to get them unless I went to business school.
I mean, to actually help you do your job
better. To be successful in this career.
Not just for a degree in order to get...
I went for the tools.
That's great.
Yeah, and I feel I got the tools. Fabulous network of classmates, because that executive program is other working executives. McLean was one of my professors. I still have a very... He sits on our board at Ex Officio.
When he was a dean of the business school?
He wasn't even a dean then. He was just an ordinary old professor.
I don't think there's anything ordinary about him, but yeah.
Prominent, yeah.
Yeah, very smart
but
guy.
It was a great program. I absolutely...
Can we say what year that was?
I got my degree from them in 98.
How long did it take you to get?
So I have an early 60s degree, then I have a 70s degree, and then I have a 90s degree.
How long did it take you to get your executive MBA?
Oh, it's a two-year program. There's no... You do the program.
You can't just...
No.
Dribble
you don't...
Drive.
No, no, no.
It sounds pretty intense.
You sign up. It's very intense. You sign up. As 100% sign up, you don't dribble it out. If you can dribble out an MBA, but the executive MBA is prescribed, and you do their program with that group of students. And
you follow them
you
all the way.
You follow that.
Interesting. Okay, breakthrough job. And this can be anything. It can be washing dishes.
I had trouble with that. I was thinking about that, and I had trouble with that because I thought, what's a breakthrough job to which career?
Well, it can also be where you learn something about people or leadership or bad management or good management or just how the world works or your place in the world. It's people have literally done everything from mowing lawns to running hospitals. Something that we can get back to it too, but it's something where you kind of, that's kind of what we're looking for. You had a little bit of an epiphany about it.
Okay. I put some notes there.
You scribbled somewhere. Okay.
Yeah, but is this being recorded while I look for my
That's
notes?
Okay. We've had people take phone calls.
I know what I put in my notes. Since I had three careers, I don't consider that I had one breakthrough job. I guess I would, in a sense, I had something that happened at each career change.
Okay.
You know, because when I went to Europe and didn't come back, I got involved with this small American modern dance company, and they called it American Modern Dance in Europe at that time because it was still like a new deal.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a breakthrough job into that artistic career, which had lots of other parts to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was back here following, every artist really has to learn how to teach too. There's almost, you know, you can count them on one hand, artists that do not have to teach.
Have to in order to survive?
Yeah, indeed. Very few artists, no matter how fantastic they are, survive by selling their art alone.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
Right.
Songs or dances or paintings or whatever it is. There are some.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not that many.
Right, okay.
I would say that, you know, although I had that degree in education, I consider my breakthrough job was when Brown University hired me to come in for a year as a guest professor in that.
Brown?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When was that?
That was in the mid-70s. That came at a time, this has been where I had been married and a divorce, and so that was also a transition point in my life.
Uh-huh.
So, in terms of the education that...
you being an educator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I hadn't been teaching.
Right.
But when I really had to not do it as a sideline.
I see. Okay.
I had to buckle down and get on with it.
So where was that in terms of Stanford and CSU Chico?
It was pre-CSU Chico.
Got it. Okay. So that kind of got you on
and then,
that.
And then I went, I had guested at CSU Chico a couple of times, but then I went from, then CSU Chico actually invited me when I was in Providence, Rhode Island at Brown to come out.
Great.
And so that's how I got to Chico.
So that kind of,
the job that
I understand.
Got me started wasn't the Chico job.
Okay.
And then my breakthrough job in Hawaii, in the nonprofit administration, was really their early childhood nonprofit. And I have to give them the credit.
What's the name of that organization?
It's the Hawaii Association for the Education of Young Children. And its acronym is H-A-E-Y.
Okay, not quite there yet. Hawaii Association
for the,
education of Young Children.
H-A-E-Y-C. And they still exist. But what was interesting to me was that although I had always been a director, where, you know, in Chico I was director of the program, I was kind of filling the leadership where I ran the group, whatever the group was, whether it was when I was a little kid at 8 years old, I ran the neighborhood gang, you know. But what was interesting about the young childhood community was since I was out of my direct element, I had to really pay attention to the administrative skills. And so it was they taught me as much as I brought to them. If I hadn't had the preparation with the early childhood folks, I wouldn't have been able to make the Alliance a success.
As a leader of an organization.
A nonprofit.
Right.
Understanding the administration part.
Right. I mean,
Yeah. So I thank them for that.
Gotcha. And when was that you were there?
I worked for them from 92 to 98.
And what was
And I overlapped, because for a while I did both the Urban Childhood and the Arts Alliance.
And what was your title then?
Executive director.
And you were part-time?
No, I was full-time with them. And then what happened for a while was I took on, the Arts Alliance came and I said, no, I can't, I have a full-time job. But I did part-time with the Arts Alliance and full-time with the early childhood folks. And then I did an overlap where I did part-time with both. And then I said, no, this is not working, folks. I'm gotta pick one or the other.
And so, what years were the overlap?
The overlap years were 94 to 98.
Wow.
It was all kind of mixed up there. But I had the same office, and I just had a different secretary for each organization. So I had one office, and I worked a deal between the two organizations where they shared the rent, and they shared the coffee machine, and they... then one secretary had her desk and the other secretary had her desk, different phone lines. So I was able to do that for a while.
Where was that? Where was your office?
It was in the American Savings Bank building on King Street, South King Street. Not 1314. You know, it's where the Times supermarket is. It's a little three-story building. Mm-hmm. We were on the third floor in that building.
Wow.
Yeah. So that
well, that's interesting.
Yeah. That worked for a while. And then what happened is the Arts Alliance started to grow. When I came here, the budget was maybe about $35,000, and now we're at over $1 million. And that's because I got all those new skills from the Executive MBA program, and I was able to help grow the organization. So I could not do justice to both organizations.
I understand.
So I made my choice.
Very, very interesting. I wish I could have seen that office.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, little known fact. And what we look for is something that even some of your friends might go, interesting, I didn't know that about Marilyn.
I was going to use the fact that I had a scholarship to Harvard Business School as a little known fact. I thought that was...
Okay.
I don't go around talking about it, ever.
Okay.
So the only people that know about it, for the most part, are about my husband and my daughter. That's one
okay.
that I had.
And you didn't go because you wanted to go do the Europe experience?
Oh,
because
I had dancing in my heart. Business side of dancing in my heart.
Okay. Was there another one? That one's pretty good.
I just thought that was really interesting, a little known fact, and it sort of explains a life cycle that it was the road not taken, but I did eventually take it when the opportunity came up. So I think it's sort of interesting, and I'm teaching right now, I'm on the affiliate graduate faculty at UH, and I just got done teaching a course called Theory and Criticism of Dance. I guess there because their professor that's supposed to teach that resigned, and I taught it in the past and they brought me in. But I was talking to the students who are talented and young, and I was looking at them and realizing they're facing that dilemma now. What shall I do? What shall I pursue? And they're at that place where they're going to have roads not taken. But you never know when you get it.
So you talked about that experience?
No, see, I didn't. That's why I said it's a little known fact, because I didn't talk to them about it.
Okay.
We talked about the theory and criticism.
Okay.
No, I do have something that I gave them, a quote that I like, that I feel strongly about dancers. Ordinary people can perceive what's going on in the present. The gods can perceive the future, and wise men perceive what is about to happen. And I feel very strongly that dancers and artists have the ability to perceive what is about to happen because they've activated more brain centers than if I had just taken that path back when and just done the business degree. Mm-hmm. I would have overemphasized one of my brain centers. Now, I'm happy that I got to reactivate it, but I would have ignored all the brain centers that we have, which are supposedly every chakra has a brain center. You know, talking about trusting your gut feeling on something, trusting, you know, your heart tells you something or other. Understanding how to pay attention to all of those levels. So that's how I think you become wise. Pay attention to all of those things. So I was telling my students that because I see them struggling with these choices now. And it's in many of them up against families like I was that said, you know, got you this college degree and you're going to do what? You're going to go be an artist?
So, you have a Stanford degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're supposed to go do something.
Right.
You know.
Well,
solid with it. So.
Okay. Well, let me ask.
That's
you.
That's my one, story about that. Yeah.
No, it's good. I want to follow up, and as we're talking, some of these will become individual questions because obviously we can't fit them all into one little. But it's very interesting, and it's all about in the umbrella of what we're speaking about, the purpose of our calling. But I want to ask you what you mentioned at the executive MBA program that kind of gave you the tools to do some. Can you talk about that a little bit? What are some of the
tools? I had no clue what to do with an Excel spreadsheet before I went to that program.
Well, you can take that down at CompUSA.
Not the same way. Not so that you have to project scenarios about potential fiscal outcomes should you choose to make this investment with, you know, you have X amount of money to put where, do what with it, and, you know, how you plan a budget and what it could lead to if you make these choices, what you could lead to if you make some alternative choices.
Oh, I see.
And to project that out on a spreadsheet in a scenario business scenario.
Okay.
I wouldn't have had a clue what to do.
Uh-huh.
And no, I could have learned how to do the computer commands for an Excel spreadsheet. And I could have learned the formulas, so I could set that up. But in terms of more complex thinking and business planning and budgeting.
Great.
That's just one
example.
Yeah, or
a couple others that come to mind? That.
What was an opportunity about that program was that since we all came in as executives or something or other, mm-hmm. the something or other was important. Even though I might have known some of the classmates that I had who were in the medical profession, and there were two attorneys in the class, there was an engineer, I might have known them socially. It's not the same thing as getting in the trenches with them. And sitting down to problem solve and work out a project together. A project that we all had to bring our particular expertise to bear on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And even though I might have known them for years in a social situation, you know, enjoyed them, I would have never had the same level of discussion.
Right. Sure.
So.
And gotten to know them about how their brains work.
And have to produce a concrete result by working together as a team.
Right.
So that level of teamwork with brains that don't think like mine, and mine didn't think like theirs.
Uh-huh.
So that level of working together, I don't think is possible. And I mean, I'm sure that people learn it if they are in battle together in an army or, you know, mm-hmm. come together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's other situations, and I think that people try to simulate it by doing like weekend workshops where they throw people together. But to do it for 2 years is different.
Now, you mentioned the program gave you the tools that helped you grow the organization.
Yes. So I was using the financial, mm-hmm. the number crunching.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, that's my phone. I'll just let it take a message.
Okay.
Can I just...
Sure. You can just check it.
I can turn it off.
Well, if I stop this, I may not be able to start it again. That's why I'm not that Akamai on this yet. Why does your cell phone play the? Is that the? I know that's
Sting.
A theme to the Sting. Is that what it's actually called?
No, I just of the canned ones.
Oh, I see.
I picked that one.
But everybody that runs an organ, the question I'm getting at is everybody that runs a, well, particularly a nonprofit, but any group that relies on fundraising. There's some tips you can share.
I would say that's a challenge for our organization, even though we look quite healthy and we're doing terrific. It's a huge challenge, as you saw from our chart.
Mm-hmm.
We do have, you know, like a little group of individuals that support us. We don't have the corporate and business support that we ought to have mm-hmm. for what we contribute.
Right.
And how do we get that?
I was surprised by that.
Yeah, and how do we get that? How do we convince people? The arts are always a challenge. All nonprofits are a challenge. All nonprofits are in a continually doing fundraising cycle. It's comes mm-hmm. comes with the territory.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what happens, it's part of what you do. The arts have an additional problem when they're up against the nonprofits that are doing serious social services.
Mm-hmm.
And we always have to convince people that we're not taking away from the social service, that we're actually adding on to, but it's a much harder reach because if you've got somebody who's homeless or somebody that hasn't been able to buy their lunch today,
right.
you got a serious problem here. And so you have to think long term. If you give somebody a skill by training them in either creative problem solving or how they can improve their drawing skills through an eye hand coordination, they're more likely to be get a job and be successful in it than not.
Mm-hmm.
Among the many things, particularly the way the brain research is coming down the line today. There's fantastic brain research that's just come out in the last 5-6 years that shows the high correlation between how the arts impact not just how children learn, but how the brain actually gets wired, how it gets formed. I mean, there are periods, there are windows in a person's development, and if you don't have that opportunity for creative exposure, and creative, there are parts of the brain that simply never connect. Okay, so down the line, we have a problem now. That adult is more likely to not reach their potential, maybe a candidate for prison. It's going to cost the society more money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you have to help people understand the investment,
right.
And it's really hard when they think the choice is, do we buy lunch today
right.
for this child, or do we be sure they have music in their schools?
So that would be
really
be your
challenge.
Major challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to say no, we have to make them both happen.
Right.
And if we want that child, it's like the I'll teach them how to fish problem.
Right.
Because if we want that child to be able to buy their own lunch in the future, we have to try to give them some lunch now, but not at the expense of their music lessons. We
right.
have to do both.
I'm glad you. We talked about that. My question, though, was really about if you're a nonprofit reading this article and trying to learn some tips from you.
Yeah. Oh.
I would like to know how you took it from a budget of $35,000 to over $1 million. Are there some concrete
board leadership, lots of grants, lots of persistence and hard work, developing, expanding the relationships to supporters. If you see our list of supporters, when I came in, this page was probably these all the sponsors in all these different arenas.
Right.
We probably had this much of it originally. So, and thinking in a broad way about lots and lots of people don't have lots and lots of money, but can give little amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, trying to figure out where you can get some people that can afford,
mm-hmm.
To get more. But not ignoring either side of it. Yeah. And, lots of grants. I'm very fortunate with the Arts Alliance Board. They're
very well connected group.
Really. Very visionary, very supportive. They're not all from practicing artists, but they're all passionate about arts and arts education.
Right.
And they understand the value. So I really commend my board who are listed here. Actually, I should give you an updated list because that one took a while.
Is part of your job making people passionate about the arts? Or stoking what passion is already there?
Both ways. We hope to attract people that are already passionate, particularly those that are giving board service that already have, But we hope to educate people that may not quite understand. I had that opportunity yesterday. Right now we're meeting with every city council person because there's been some concerns. Because the city rightfully has lots of serious problems between sewers and potholes and basic things, and so there was some talk about reducing the mayor's office of culture and the arts, and been meeting one by one with the council members. Just met one of them and said, well, I'm really kind of a sports guy, I really care for the arts. And I said, well, that's okay, I don't expect you to, but if you, he was wearing a really nice shirt. I said, the shirt you're wearing was designed by an artist, and you picked that shirt, and look around you know, he had some nice books on his shelves. And I said, just look around. If we took the arts out of your life, what you would have back? You know, it's okay, you can. But, and then I'm going through the argument where, well, the city, you know, doesn't get but property taxes to support everything. And you're non-profit, so you're not paying any property taxes. So, you know, why should we be supporting culture and arts? And I try to point out, well, it's the amount that you're giving to culture and arts is like under 0.8% of your entire city budget. So it's not like we're bleeding the budget
right.
from the things that you need to do. But symbolically, that little teeny bit of 0.8% is a huge impact on what it's doing to the quality of the society that we're living in here, what the difference is. And I point out the arts at Marks, but I also say we do pay property taxes, not directly, but our business at
right.
Arts at Marks is leased from a private property owner whose value of Marks Garage just went up, and he's paying more property taxes because he's leasing a space to an arts
mm-hmm.
that has increased the value of the property. So if it weren't for us, you wouldn't be collecting more property taxes on that. And that's just one example. This
right.
is happening everywhere.
Well, what is actually being discussed about in dollars about what's being?
I think we maybe have gotten them to hold the line they were talking about.
So there was a discussion about having a city council resolution or an actual
no, just
board?
In the budget as
oh,
it came
budget.
In. Just could,
at the mayor's office or at the council office?
Well, the Office of Culture and Arts and the Office of Economic Development come under the mayor's office.
And it's a budget that has to be
so when the budget came down, the city council was looking at the budget and saying, well, here's some stuff we don't need.
Right. Gotcha, gotcha.
And so we've been over there saying, no, wait a minute, you know.
Right. And how much money is that? You that was the
oh,
stake?
Minuscule. We're talking, what was it, about 50,000, maybe 100,000?
Per year.
Between 50 and 100,000.
Mostly for the Arts of Marks Group?
Oh, no, no, no. For their whole budget.
Oh.
That they were going to cut. No, no, no. The Arts of Marks gets 20,000. I mean, and, you know, I mean, no, 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 no.
Just in general for arts
did
funding.
They were going to reduce.
And so you were an advocate for the arts in
that's
general.
That's one of our roles as the art, you know, speak on behalf of the arts.
Now, speaking of government, there was some legislation that you were, your organization was interested in at the state
this
level.
Year we didn't do an advocacy role front and center. Last year we were very active with the last year they were talking about cutting 600,000 off of the grant giving program that comes through the state arts agency. And again, 600,000 is not all that much
mm-hmm.
of a drop in the state budget
right.
as a whole. But that 600,000 is divided up again among different arts organizations. So it benefits across the board, across the state, and that was at the state level. So we were part of the group of people going to visit all the state legislatures to hold the line on that money. In the end, it was restored.
That was last session.
Last
this session, there weren't any bills you were?
There was, the symphony endowment was up this time.
I see.
But we represent all the arts. So we were fully applauding that being funded. We have to always weigh our options as the umbrella organization when we go
I see.
Up to talk on behalf of something that benefits everyone.
Right, I see. Okay.
Yay, give it to them.
So they were fully funded again?
They asked for an endowment of $10 million, they got $4 million.
I see.
It's still highly symbolic that they got $4 million.
Good.
And we're delighted.
Okay.
It shouldn't go.
Hobbies?
Well, obviously, I love ballroom dancing. absolutely.
Dancing or the TV show?
No, both, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I like to do it, obviously. Snorkeling and swimming in the ocean. I love swimming, particularly ocean. I'm hoping the water gets cleared up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I'm sort of on a since I've left the other on the fitness routine, train, lift weights. I mean, you know, you can. It's for health reasons, but I do.
Just working out in general.
I'm real proud. I'm up to. I did leg pressed 50% of my body weight.
What?
26 reps. That's pretty good, isn't it?
That's very good.
Yeah, and I can do push-ups. I can do about 30.
That's
pretty good, huh?
Very good.
Yeah. I'm trying to go for the Fit CEO. They're doing this contest coming up. Are you fit to be CEO? They're promoting it.
Who's doing that?
Hawaii Business Magazine.
Oh. Okay.
And 24 Hour Fitness. So you have to go to get tested in your age category. Or over 50 or under 50. Obviously, I'm going for over 50, but so I'm trying to.
Good for you.
Get my yeah.
So is they. They take your body size and age and give you a set of...
Yeah, there's a standard test. You've got to do the endurance test. You've got to do the abs, the curl-ups, the push-ups, the leg presses, and flexibility.
Good.
Yeah, there's five tests.
When is that?
They're going to test us by the end of May. And I think there's a big thing coming out in October about it.
But who is the fittest?
Yeah, I guess, you know, they're probably, you know, promote whoever in this age category and whoever in this age
That's
category.
That's great. Okay, books recently read.
Oh, I brought this one. I got two. I read Thomas Friedman, The World is Flat, which I really liked. And I haven't quite finished this one, but I brought it because I find it just fascinating.
Fooled by Randomness.
Yeah. I thought you could just...
Tell me about that book.
This is just fascinating. It's really about how the theory of probability applies to managing your life or managing, in my case, of course, applying it to managing the organization.
Yeah.
But it could also, if you're just looking for investment...
I see.
...information, it's just absolutely fascinating.
Now, somebody else mentioned Blink recently.
I read that one.
Is that sort of...
Blink?
Is it along the same?
I recommend... No, it's not along the same, but I would say it's in the same big generic category. Blink is about... my take on Blink is how you really, in the first impression of meeting a situation or a person, most of the time... high percentage of the time, you really know everything there is to know.
You do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then it takes you a long time to discover what you know.
Interesting.
You have to still learn it.
Okay.
And so Blink is like learning how to tune in to those unconscious. You get that information unconsciously. And so it's talking about how do you tune up that awareness so that you can access it a lot sooner.
Hmm. Okay.
So I highly recommend Blink.
Yeah, a lot of people do. Okay, I have lots and lots of material to work with. I want to ask you a couple specific questions.
Okay.
What we've been talking about, I'm going to turn them into questions, and I think it'll be very good. But tell me what kind of things are on store for the... for the group that we can look forward to or things that...
The thing I would like to mention mm-hmm. is October 21st, our annual... We only have one big annual event. It's called Celebrate the Arts. And every October, which is Arts and Humanities Month, mm-hmm. we do it in Hawaii Theater. We have a children's art exhibit in the Arts at Mark's Garage. And then we give... This year we'll be giving 8 school awards to Arts Excellence schools from 5 from Oahu, 3 from Maui. They all have to apply and they're reviewed and they get money with their award. And then we honor one individual who has contributed in action and word a lifetime to arts and arts education.
How much does each school get?
Each school, $3,000.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The past prize awardees have been people like Auntie Irmgard when she was mm-hmm. still alive. Mm-hmm. Clarence Lee was a Bob Midkiff was an honoree. We had Bibi Freitas last year. Because right now we're in our 25th anniversary, and I have a council of chairs, so everyone who's been a chair of the organization came together to give their wisdom about what they thought. And they thought we should honor the unsung, the people that are really back there. You know, Clarence Lee people sort of know about if you're in the arts mm-hmm. community, because
right.
he designed the stamps. Andy Irmgard, everybody knew about.
Mm-hmm.
They picked last year Bibi Freitas because she's known about in the circle that she accompanies every opera singer and everybody in the world, and they just adore her. But the wider public really didn't know about her, so we honored her last year. And this year it's going to be somebody else along that line who's less prominent. And then we featured, this year we're going to have the Grammy Awardees. Daniel Hall and George Kawamoku and those guys.
Nice.
As our concert.
What about in terms of the, not the mission of the organization, but I mean just emphasis or expansion or those kinds of things that are sort of midterm goals that we can look forward to?
Well, since we just expanded our mission, which is pointed out on the newsletter.
Oh, you did? Okay, can you read that?
Yeah. We used to be the Hawaii Alliance for Arts Education.
Mm-hmm.
We are now, our mission includes education, community, and advocacy. So if you want me to read...
Please. When did that change? And if you could read it.
This new mission was adopted at the end of last year. So it's just with this newsletter.
Gotcha, okay.
Being published. And we are cultivate, sustain, and celebrate all the arts as essential to complete education and central to a vibrant community. So we emphasize teaching the arts. That's particularly important right now with the arts being cut out of our school curriculums. Building community through the arts, and our best example of that, concrete example, is the Arts at Mars Garage. But we have lots of programs where we go into housing
mm-hmm.
to bring the arts to what we call disenfranchised
communities. You mean like KPT programs?
Yeah.
Things like that, yeah.
And then promoting the arts, and that's speaking out on behalf of all the arts, and trying to demonstrate how they impact our lives, and trying to convince people again and again that it's a myth, the arts are essential, they're not an extra, and it's a long mindset to change.
That's great. Why was the, what was the thinking about why the mission needed to change?
Because there was another umbrella organization that was doing some of the overlapping work, and so the two organizations combined.
Yeah, who was that?
It was the Consortium for the Arts. And they dissolved into
gotcha.
The alliance. So we took on some of their board members, mm-hmm. and so then in order to reflect that, the mission was expanded
gotcha.
To include that.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to talk about?
I'm
running out of your time, so.
We have a summer institute coming up for people that
tell us about that.
Want to go to that. It's June 19th through 23rd at Maui Arts and Cultural Center.
Mm-hmm.
We have scholarships for teachers and principals that want to fly over to Maui. And it is bringing in some of the Kennedy Center artists. Oh, we need to be sure that you know that we're affiliated with the John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. Every state has one alliance. We're the Hawaii Alliance. And it's a program that comes out of the Kennedy Center. It's a very valuable program. I've served on national leadership for the Kennedy Center. There's seven people from different alliances from around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But what's important is they also have a roster of artists that we can bring in. And so we will have some of them at this Summer Institute. Great. And they're absolutely wonderful. So that's something.
What kind of medium is there?
It's this
from the
is there all the arts? There isn't a medium, all the arts. This particular summer, we're going to talk about the Arts First Toolkit, which we developed to align, so the arts will align with our state standards. And it's being published this summer, and we're introducing it at the Institute. It helps the generalist teacher bring arts integrated lessons into the classroom, so they get a 2-for-1. They can teach dance and math in one lesson.
Right. Can we talk a little bit about the website you were...
Yeah.
What is the URL for that, and how can people...
The URL for the Learning Interchange is apple.com/ALI/Hawaii.
Okay. And who is that geared to,
that website? It's geared to all teachers, particularly elementary teachers, and teaching artists that want to understand how to work in the schools these days, so that they can do arts-integrated lessons.
What about
parents? Parents are using it for homeschooling. We're getting, since it's on the web, we're getting emails from Nebraska saying, thanking you.
Really?
I'm using this in my homeschooling.
Can you just briefly tell us what the how it works with that?
So you hit 2 sets of standards in one lesson. It's geared to different grade levels, K-5, mm-hmm. and can be adapted. You could take a grade 5 lesson and adapt it down to grade 4 and up to grade 6, depending mm-hmm. on the...
Sure.
And there's at least one core art standard and one core other academic. And I always say other academic because the arts are one of the core academic subjects by law. So, as I said, you might get dance and math together. You might get visual arts and science together. You might get drama and literature together. Mm-hmm. But the lessons are all designed so that the standards in both subjects are being met, which makes them very usable by today's classroom teachers because of all of the pressures that they're getting from Your Child Left Behind.
Right. So it meets those.
They
pressure.
Have, 40 minutes and they don't, I can't do the art. And it's not that they don't believe in the arts, and I can't do them because I have to do
right.
the reading lesson or the math lesson. So this helps them do both at the same time.
And how did this program come about, and how did it get affiliated with, since it goes through?
We got a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts to do something technologically based to deliver standards-based arts. And one thing and another led us to the partnership with Apple Computer to go up on the web.
And when did it go up?
It got completed in September of 2005. So it's only been up in the completion. It went up in pieces, but now there was always the goal of having a library of 20, and they're all there now. It went
20
different lessons.
And any idea how many teachers in Hawaii might be using it?
It's very hard to track. We asked Apple, since they hosted for us, if we could have a counter so we could...
Right.
But they aren't...
How is it advertised? How would a teacher in Mililani or Maui or...
Slowly. We're getting the word out slowly. Yeah.
Maybe we can help you.
Is anything you can say about letting people know?
But anybody can go onto that website.
Anybody. It doesn't matter. Any kind of computer can go to this website and use this material.
You don't need some password or...
No
or
password.
...membership or something like that.
Nothing.
Nice.
And if they have questions, you could always have them call us or email us. You can always
right.
publish our email, haae@aloha.net,
okay.
Where they can call 533-ARTS, that's 533-2787,
okay.
because we can guide them through it, and it's not complicated. We got them through it in 3 seconds.
Right.
You know.
But you, as you said, there's teachers around the...
Around the country using it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, are Apple designed that for the Hawaii Arts Alliance, or it's for
no.
the world?
Apple designed it, the Learning Interchange, with the idea of putting up many different things to promote their belief in education. Of course, they want to sell their product
sure.
to schools. We know this. So they had a budget to do this. They have a worthy product, so we didn't have any problem. They didn't have anything in the arts or at in the arts at the elementary level. They had some arts at the secondary level on the website. And one of our board members had worked with Apple and was able to connect us and say, hey, look, Hawaii's developing this curriculum for elementary arts and arts integration. And so we went to California, we met with them, we showed them what we were developing, and they said, this is perfect, we don't have anything like this. We'd love to host it if you can finish the product and get it online.
That's great.
So that's what happened. Yeah. So it's been a partnership, and we've been grateful to Apple for
okay.
providing that.
Terrific.
And they came out as we were developing it. And they have sort of... they have some basic things that it had to include that met the educational standards that they felt were important. It wasn't anything that we weren't doing anyway, but the particular sequence of the introduction of the lesson, I mean, details that are obvious, but they insisted that we have them. So we
okay.
do.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking the